Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
This is the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio.
Hello and welcome to the Arash Markazi Show, presented by the Sporting Tribune on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio in Southern California, 98.5 The Bet in Las Vegas, and the Hawaii Sports Radio Network, 95.1 FM and AM 760 in Hawaii. A lot to get into here on a Friday. Let's not waste any time. Let's bring in our main man from the Sporting Tribune, Fernando Ramirez. Fernando, how are you?
Arash, I'm doing well. I wasn't as busy as you were on Thursday. You were all over the place. But yeah, no, I was at a Padres opening day for their matchup against the Giants.
Yeah, that was, I mean, it is really my favorite ballpark. And I know that Dodger fans don't hate me for saying that. I think you guys will agree. I mean, if you've been to Petco Park, it is one of the best ballparks in the country. What was the scene? What was the atmosphere like before we talk about the game? Again, it's in a perfect location. It's a beautiful park. The expectations, quite honestly, are not what they were a year ago. That being said, what was the scene? What was it like there?
Well, there was it took me about 25, 30 minutes once I got off the freeway to get all the way over to parking at Petco Park. So that was a little bit of a challenge, but it was a lot of excitement, a lot of people. Bars were packed. I mean, I know I saw a bar where right next to Petco where it was flooded out with people were in there, but then there was people also standing outside and drinking and getting all excited. Once you got into the stadium, though, it was kind of like it was about 15, 20 minutes before the game started. And as soon as they announced, oh, hey, we're going to honor Peter Seidler, that's when everybody flooded to their seats. The late owner who passed away a couple months ago, everybody fled to their seats. Everybody sat down and they honored him. His wife threw out the first pitch. And the craziest part, though, everybody was kind of wondering what was going to happen when Bob Melvin or Bo Mel was going to be announced. And as soon as he was, there was a mixture. I think the boos were a little bit louder than the cheers. But, I mean, that's to be expected. But the loudest cheer, though, I mean, besides Manny Machado and Tatis, was their new manager, Mike Shield. I mean, people are excited about what he brings. People are, like, still wondering what happened in St. Louis that they let a guy go like this. He's pretty good. And Jackson Merrill, the rookie, he got a lot of cheers too. The Padre fans are excited about him. So yeah, it was an atmosphere. It was very loud. They got antsy right around the fifth inning when there was no run scored by the Padres. But once they got it going, it got pretty loud.
What do you think? And you were the first to tell me, again, following the team closely, that Bob Melvin can't come back, that this isn't a good fit. What do you think happened there from when they got to the championship series or right on the cusp of the World Series to where it just didn't work? What happened there?
I think it was a little bit of everything, but it kind of seems like right now they've kind of thrown this all on – well, it just wasn't a good fit with him and Juan Soto. Like, it kind of seems like a lot of people believe that Juan Soto was a little bit of a problem in the locker room. And I mean, you had heard about this coming from Washington, so you had to deal with it. And then they dealt with it. But as soon as like Tatis came back, and then you signed Xander Bogaerts, and it just, there was a little bit of a, like, there's too many. There's too many head honchos and not enough workers, in a sense. Like, everybody wants to be the high chief. And if we know anything from WWE, there's only one, there's only one tribal chief. But no, I think that was it. Like, it was just too many different personalities in the locker room. I mean, I'm going to be honest, Arash, Padre fans can come catch flag on me if they want, but Fernando Tatis Jr., Ha-Sung Kim, and Manny Machado have their locker right next to each other. Xander Bogaerts has it on the opposite side of the locker room. Juan Soto also had his locker a couple lockers away from them. And I mean, I know locker positioning may not be up to them, but come on, like, it just, I think there was just a lot of bad blood in there, and they needed to kind of weed that out. And Padre fans thought, we're not going to trade Juan Soto. No, yeah, they were. That was kind of one of their dead set things. They needed to get him out of there. And they're all talking about moving on and trying to do stuff different. And that's what I wrote about, Arash, that last year, they were terrible trying to come back from games, and they were terrible leaving runners on base in scoring positions. Well, yesterday they were 4 for 12. They got four guys in. And then on the other side of things, they were able to come back being down 3-2 to the Giants, and they had a big seventh inning. And eight out of their nine hits were singles. There was no home runs, nothing like that. So this was kind of a grinded out game, and that's what Shields said. We want to be able to grind it out, get better as we go along, get better as the season goes along. So it seems like the message is pretty clear from Mike Shields and the players that they're excited for this season, and they feel like they might be able to do a little something, even though obviously a lot of people are counting them out.
Yeah. The Padres win the game 6-4. That's the most important thing to begin the season with a win. Best case scenario, again, the Dodgers are stacked. The Diamondbacks look like they're going for it.
That was, yeah.
Right. So what is
in the third inning, you just get what's his name from Rocky IV? Throw the damn towel. Yeah. Like, it just felt like they were getting annihilated by them. But yeah, my bad.
No, but I was just, I mean, you have obviously the like big team, the, you know, $1 billion, the Dodgers who are going for it. But then obviously respect to the Diamondbacks who are saying, it's not going to be that easy. Well, where do the Padres fit into this? Do you think that there's even like an outside shot where they're contending? Are they a wild card team? What are your thoughts on the Padres this season?
Well, I'm a little nervous about the hitting. And I know that against the Dodgers in that second game, they kind of let it loose and they were able to do that. Yeah, but I'm more interested in games like yesterday where it's a little bit of that grinded out game. Are their bats going to be able to sustain hitting, even when they're in a little bit of a slump during a game? Are they going to be able to kind of get it going like they did yesterday? I mean, yesterday could be an anomaly, or it could be about a bigger picture of what this season's going to look like for them. And that's the thing. Last year, they would leave runners in scoring positions and they would strike out or they'd ground out or stuff like that. I still think they need another bat out there. I mean, Xander's good. Machado was Machado didn't even speak to the media yesterday. He kind of like grabbed his bat and he kind of almost tried to break it over his knee. He was frustrated. I'm like, dude, it's only game three. Like, why? Like, what's the frustration? And he didn't speak to the media after. So, that's another thing too. They're going to have to keep their temperaments down and kind of chill out. Like, you can't just go ballistic because it's not going for you. So that's kind of what I'm looking at. If they can keep calm, and grind out some of these games, I mean, they could make the playoffs as like the last wild card team. And then obviously there, all hell could break loose. But I still think that they need another bat out there. I mean, Jurickson Profar is a good utility man, but I kind of feel like they need something out there. And then they're putting a lot of eggs in one basket when it comes to Jackson Merrill. And I know a lot of fans are excited. The players are excited, too. Every player was raving about Jackson Merrill in the locker room. But the thing is, you're asking a lot from a rookie. So I still think that they need a left outfielder out there to kind of hit. But I think they could end up maybe making a wild card or barely missing it. But a lot is going to depend on their pitching too. Like, Yu Darvish started off the game well, but then it kind of unraveled a little bit at one point. So they're going to depend a lot on their pitching. There's still a lot of question marks that I still have with this team before I could say they're going to be a wild card team. I don't know. I'm a little skeptical, to be honest.
I feel you. If people out there don't know Peter Seidler, what an amazing man. And again, he really wanted to bring home a championship to San Diego, really invested in the Padres, you know, being a big market team. So it was great to see not only the fans, but obviously the players. Fernando Tatis had these really amazing custom Jordan cleats. Put into context what Peter Seidler meant to not only the Padres, but San Diego.
Well, I mean, and honestly, like, we all know that at one point it felt like fans down here thought, oh, Dean Spanos has one foot out the door, and he's heading to L.A. Well, that, I mean, not just that, but Peter Seidler was embraced by the community. People loved him, especially when he went all in after a couple of really crappy years. He went all in, and fans appreciated that, And he just gave San Diego hope. He said, we're going to bring a championship. And I talked to Tatis yesterday about it. And he said, look, this guy's a part of my story. He's like, he said that during my worst moment, Peter was there. During my best moment, he was the loudest one cheering for me. So he meant a lot to me. Arash, not a lot of owners do that. Not a lot of owners get involved in all that stuff and what's going on and this and that. Like, a lot of owners would just let whatever's happening happen. And no, it seems like Peter Seidler was right there with these guys. And that's the thing Tatis said after. We hope we can bring a championship to San Diego for him. This season is for him. And that's another thing, Arash. That's another outlier. Like, maybe they are motivated by that, and maybe that's what helps them squeak in. But, and you know, when you're playing for somebody or something in unison, like if everybody in that organization says, yeah, we're doing this for him, that could be tough also. That could be something that really motivates them and kind of gets them going. But yeah, no, Peter was a great human being. He did a lot in the community as well for San Diego. So that just made him, he was fully embraced by fans. And even some members of the Padres organization grew out their mustaches for Peter. And you could see that yesterday. Mark Grant was one, Bob Scanlon, some other people did it. But yeah, it just, the moment of silence was really like a moment. Like, you know, sometimes you have Jack Wings that go out there and they start saying stuff or yelling or whatever, like PG, kid show.
Yeah, I love
so
it.
Obviously, yeah. So here it was just really a moment of silence. And you could tell, like, I saw some media members, like, really drop their heads. And I'm like, wow, I wish I could have known him a lot more. But they really dropped their heads because they're like, yeah, like, this guy was something else. And you're like, wow. So, yeah, he just he really left his mark here in San Diego. And hopefully they can win a championship for him. I mean, nothing would bring this family more happiness than a championship coming to the city of San Diego.
Yeah. While we have you on the line, just because the draft is coming up and there's a lot of news following the big NFL meeting in Florida, I want to get your thoughts on the latest with Jim Harbaugh and the Chargers. They had the fifth pick. Harbaugh's really pumping up his QB, really hoping that maybe there's four QBs going in the top four picks. So they really have their pick of non-quarterback players. Your thoughts on what is the latest, I guess, with Jim Harbaugh and the Chargers?
Well, on Monday, Tuesday, we're going to be speaking to Jim for off-season conditioning. So that'll be interesting to see. I still look at it and I'm like, wow, this guy really is the head. Like, it's just interesting to see him back in the NFL after so many years. Well, you know, it's funny. He kind of did two things during the owners' meetings, and I know he's not going to give the media a lot. He's not that kind of guy. He kind of tries to distract you and take you down another rabbit hole. But what I got from Jim is I think he is trying to help J.J. McCarthy out, but I think he's trying to help himself out too. Either way, Jim wins during the draft. Either the Arizona Cardinals take the Minnesota Vikings two first-round draft picks. They trade down, and Marvin Harrison Jr. sitting right there for Jim, or Malik Nabers, or the Vikings decide to trade with the Chargers, and they trade down, and they have the 11th and the 23rd. Look, if they have the 11th and the 23rd, I think he's going to go offensive line, right tackle at least once. Yeah. Why? Because he was talking about the offensive line. He's like, what is the one position that doesn't depend on anybody, but everybody depends on them? He said the offensive line. He's like, and defensive line players are like, well, what about us? They depend on us too. He's like, no, but this is completely different. Like, all 11 depend on the five that are blocking. So I really think Trey Pipkins has kind of been this guy out of Sioux Falls who has had a lot of offensive line coaches during his tenure, but he's had too many injuries, and I feel like he really wants to solidify that right side of the offensive line. They need a guard as well. So I wouldn't doubt they go 11, go right tackle, and then maybe, who knows, maybe if Brock Bowers ends up dropping a little bit, who knows, maybe he jumps up and grabs him, or maybe they go corner. They need cornerback help too. They need guys who are going to tackle. Even with the guy they just got, Fulton, he's been injured as well. He's been injured in the past, so I don't know how much you're going to be able to depend on him. So they're going to need to prepare themselves with cornerbacks. But either way, Jim wins. So I think it's I think obviously, and I'm going to be honest, Arash, drafting positional players is a luxury. The Chargers don't have room for luxury right now. They have to fill out the rest of their team. And who knows, maybe they go really boring, boring to the typical football fan. They go boring and they go right tackle at 11 and defensive tackle at 23. They could totally do that too. So they really need to fill out their team. And they still have money to play around with. I mean, obviously, like I told you last time, this is a money ball situation. They're not going to spend a lot of money on free agents. It's going to be $2-3 million contracts. So, I think either way, Jim wins, but he's really positioning himself to be a big winner in this draft, no matter if it's staying put or if it's trading out.
The last time we talked you were at the USC Pro Day. Caleb Williams was there. We knew that. But Keenan Allen being there, again, you've covered him for so many years. What did you make of him being out there, and how do you think he will help Caleb?
Well, Keenan, I spoke to Keenan, and he said, well, he's like, obviously the draft hasn't happened yet, but I'm excited. I'm excited for what this kid, could end up being. And Keenan's already been through this. So he's already been through the helping develop a player. He's already been through a situation like this with Justin Herbert. When Keenan first came in, it was Phillip Rivers was depending on him to grow up. And obviously Phillip helped him, Antonio Gates helped him, Eric Weddle helped him, Eddie Royal helped him, Stevie Johnson helped him. But when Justin Herbert came in, it was Justin Herbert was Keenan Allen was depending on Justin Herbert and was helping Justin Herbert develop. That's the thing. Right now, Caleb has a lot of controversy with him off of a lot of different things. I think Keenan would sit him down and be like, look, dude, just go out there. If you ball, people will forget everything. People won't care. People will just care about your play. Right now, it's just like I call it weirdo time, and people are just coming up with different things. Like he's wearing nail polish, his phone is pink, all this crap. It's just crap. But the thing is, Jalen Johnson already came out and he said, hey, Caleb, or whoever comes in, you can't be Mr. Hollywood in this locker room. That's going to be interesting to see. I mean, he's been the big dog for a long time. He's going to need to learn that when you go into an NFL locker room, you're going to kind of have to keep it chill, calm down, and just put your best foot forward, because these players can smell BS from a mile away. So if you're not real, they'll let you know real quick. So I'm interested to see what happens moving forward. But Keenan Allen being on this team, I feel like that's why they wanted to go get him, is because they knew Keenan's been through this before and he could help develop Caleb.
Before we close out, and I'll get your official predictions next week, but WrestleMania is coming up. And listen, it's going to be one. This is the kind of card, to be honest, I was really hoping we'd get last year in Los Angeles. I really wanted to see Rock. But anyways, love Heel Rock. It's been fun to watch.
Yeah.
I guess real quick, last couple minutes here. I mean, your excitement for this two-night WrestleMania in Philadelphia.
You know what's crazy? I love it. I'm all for it. The only thing is, I wish the main event of night one was something different. I understand why they're not going to do it, but Rhea and Becky, I think, should be the main event of night one. I think that would actually be great. But on the flip side of it, I understand why they're going full force with this. I love it, to be honest. I love Heel Rock. I think he's done a great job, especially what he did on Monday night to Cody. Now what I'm interested in, Arash, is that Goldust keeps on throwing out stuff on Twitter. Roman went at Seth on Twitter. Like, people are using social media in such a beautiful way now. That's the way you tell a story as well. It's via social media. So I think they've done a great job. I love what the cinema that we're seeing right now. And then the different camera angles that they're using. I think WWE right now is on fire, and I think they're doing a great job. It's not like over on AEW where you have Tony Khan and Eric Bischoff going at it on Twitter. So, I think WWE is doing a great job right now, and they just need to keep on telling this story. And again, right now they're doing a great job with it. And now we're hearing that Stone Cold and John Cena could be involved. It's like, wow, like you guys are really going to go with the Avengers, or like, I don't know, just it's going to be crazy. Those two nights in Philadelphia are going to be completely nuts.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I love about this time of year, that like And I tell friends this, that you don't have to have been watching every single day. And again,
exactly,
there's programming on basically 5 days a week at this point. It's fantastic. But
no, and WWE does a great job of like right before the match,
they
do give you a whole synopsis of everything, and people love it. Like, people can catch up that way. So beautiful job. WWE gets the chef's kiss for everything that they're doing leading up to Philly.
Exactly. So, you know, when you got the, you know, John Cena's and Stone Cold's, I mean, just tune in tonight, WrestleMania. And again, we'll get Fernando's official picks and breakdown next week. And listen, I'm really looking forward to it. Also, it's not looking like it's coming to Vegas next year, but I'm still holding out hope. There's a lot of other cities in the midst of it, maybe Minneapolis. I know, right? We're still holding out hope for Vegas. Fernando, you're the best. We will have you back on next week. Let's leave it there for now. When we come back, we'll talk to Grant Mona about the Dodgers opening day. When we come back right here on the Mightier 1090 in Southern California, the Bet in Las Vegas, and the Hawaii Sports Radio Network.
We'll be right back with the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio.
Time. There's nothing more valuable. It's what drives everyone to make the most of every moment. We celebrate living large in the now. In a city where time disappears, we create experiences that electrify the soul and memories that will last forever. We go big. We go all night. And here, everyone is invited. So get loose and get loud.
This is Circa. You'll have the time of your life.
Time. There's nothing more valuable. It's what drives everyone to make the most of every moment. We celebrate living large in the now. In a city where time disappears, we create experiences that electrify the soul and memories that will last forever. We go big. We go all night. And here, everyone is invited. So get loose and get loud.
This is Circa. You'll have the time of your life.
This is the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio.
Welcome back to the Arash Markazi Show, presented by the Sporting Tribune on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio in Southern California, 98.5 The Bet in Las Vegas, and the Hawaii Sports Radio Network, 95.1 FM and AM 760 in Hawaii. Just as a reminder, if you have a question or comment or want to win tickets to an upcoming game in Southern California, Las Vegas, or Hawaii, call our hotline 310-400-0340. So we were talking in the last segment to Fernando Ramirez. So Fernando Ramirez was at Petco Park to watch the Padres defeat the San Francisco Giants 6-4. But listen, the game that I was at, the game that we were both really focused on, the game that you wrote about, the Dodgers looking as good as advertised in their 7-1 blowout win over the St. Louis Cardinals in their home opener for, listen, all intents and purposes, real opening day. Grant, a lot of expectations for this team. A lot of talk about the top of the lineup. They looked as good as they possibly could. Your thoughts on the Dodgers' first home win of the season?
Yeah, that's what it looks like right there. If you're going to put together a team like this, that top three, I mean, they showed up and showed out, right? Shohei Ohtani had two hits. Freddie Freeman had two hits. Mookie Betts hit a home run. Freddie Freeman hit a home run. I think it was through their first six plate appearances, they were 4-for-4 and all of them reached base. And that is exactly what you'd want to see from a Dodgers team that, look, there's a lot of expectations coming in. And I know they already played two games, right? They've already played in Korea and they counted. But, for this home opener, it felt more like an opening day. It felt more like the first official game. It just did. I mean, yeah, the theatrics of Dodger Stadium, the flyover, the walkouts, the introductions. It felt more like the first game. And, Tyler Glasnow had a shaky start as well in his first game in Korea. And he said that he himself felt a little bit uncomfortable over there. He looked very comfortable and at home in his first home start. He went six innings. He only gave up one earned run and it was on a home run that he kind of just left over the plate. He looked wipe out. I mean, his fastball was reaching 98. his breaking stuff was really, really filthy. That's the Tyler Glasnow that they're going to need, you know, now with Shohei Ohtani out and Kershaw not being there until probably August, July or August, I would say. So, and you know, we don't know what's going to happen with Yamamoto. I do expect Yamamoto to rebound. I expect him to be a very good pitcher, but I expect him to take a little bit of time to kind of work into the major league, you know, the mound and the ball. So, this team, it was such an amazing first win because it just felt like a total team win, right? James Outman had two hits. Max Muncy and Will Smith had a hit each. The offense was clicking, right? So this is what it looks like. If you're going to go throughout the season and you're going to have this lineup, this is exactly what it's going to look like. And, you know, that standing ovation and that intro for Shohei Ohtani for the first time at Dodger Stadium, that was probably one of the loudest I've heard through the TV. That was something special. So, the Dodger fans showed out on an afternoon on a Thursday, as expected. And, you know, I'm pretty excited to see where this team goes, but that is kind of like the barometer right there. That's the standard you set in the first game.
Was there something that stood out to you in terms of something that surprised you about this team? Like, again, I know it's, you know, just one game, and it's really technically game three of the season. But, you know, just looking at the top of the lineup, and I just kept thinking, like what an amazing thing that we're seeing in terms of, like, and even Shohei wasn't used to it, right? Where, you know, he hit a stand-up triple, but it's like, oh, by the way, you got Mookie Betts out there as well. So, like, just know, and you know, we talked to Dave Roberts post game, and he said he really liked Shohei in the two spot because Mookie Betts will get on base. And then we talked to Shohei after the game, and he was like, "My goal at my last at bat was to get for Freddie Freeman one more at bat." It was just like the way that those three guys will work together. So we knew that. Was there something that you saw in the first game that maybe surprised you about this team?
I think they're just the way they're hitting is for each other, right? It's not an individual thing. Like you just mentioned, that they mentioned is that, you know, they're just trying to get it to the next guy. And I think that's what some of the best teams really do. I know they have a lot of star power and they're trying to hit home runs and obviously they want their power numbers, but if this team can find a way to just pass the baton on to the next guy down the road, that's going to be a recipe for success because honestly, Arash, that's something that I did not see in the playoffs, right? A lot of it was selfish at bats, chasing pitches. You know, I know it's been a few games already, but in these three games, you know, official games that they've already played, I've seen a lot of, you know, passing it to the next guy, poking it in a hole, you know, trying to drive in a run when you're supposed to, not trying to swing for the fences. And I think Shohei Ohtani is a big part of that. He's such a team guy. People forget that. You know, they think, oh, he's just trying to hit a home run every time. This is a guy that cares about winning. He's a guy that cares about passing the baton on to the next guy, making sure that they win the game, doing the right thing on the field. So I hope to see this mindset change. I hope that there's a mindset change at the plate because in years past, it's been home run or bust, and that has gotten them into a lot of bad situations. So this year, I've seen some signs of them just trying to get it to the four-hitter, the five-hitter, and just passing it on. Because, look, I know we talk about the top three. I know we talk about the top four guys with Will Smith. The guys behind him are pretty good too. Teoscar Hernandez, I know he struck out three times, but he had a double. You know, James Outman, I think that he's going to have another great year. Max Muncy's a power threat. Like, this is a lineup that's deep. So you can afford to kind of have that mentality of, okay, if I get a base hit, I know the guy behind me is going to get me in or at least get me over. Yeah. So, you know, that's kind of a different shift in mindset that I've seen already.
The big question about this team, at least while they get healthy, is the pitching. We asked Dave Roberts about this pregame. When it came to Clayton Kershaw, he said basically, you know, he was very transparent. He's like, Clayton's very sensitive when it comes to timeline, but he, you know, he said it would be fair to assume this summer with Walker Buehler. They're still trying to figure that out, whether, you know, they send him to AAA and get him right. Again, when this team is healthy, and you can even loop in Shohei, although he's not going to pitch this season. I mean, it is an embarrassment of riches when this team is healthy, that they're not healthy. Kind of far from it, to be honest. What do you think about this pitching staff while they try to get healthy? Will they be okay? And again, there's question marks here, right? In terms of Yamamoto, again, the richest contract to a pitcher in baseball history. We expect him to play well at some point. Obviously, did not in his first start during the regular season. Has not looked great this spring training. We'll see what happens this weekend, although we might get a rain out. We'll see. But anyways, big picture, your thoughts on the pitching short-term and long-term?
I think it's still really good, and you're right. It's not even fully healthy, which is actually crazy to think about. You know, people kind of forget about Walker Buehler, right? He's a guy that's going to come back and be a really critical piece of this rotation. But right now, if you're looking at it, having Tyler Glasnow, that's kind of why you got Tyler Glasnow, because you needed depth, right? Last year in the NLDS, they did not have the starting pitching that you would think of a World Series team would have. We all thought they did, but when we got to the playoffs, we knew that it probably just couldn't cut it. Clayton Kershaw got roughed up, Bobby Miller got roughed up, and, you know, Lance Lynn got roughed up for the primarily for the last month of the season. Yeah. That wasn't good enough. And that's why the front office went out and got Yamamoto and got Glasnow to get more top end talent. So that when you're in a playoff scenario, you know, I know I'm thinking way too ahead of myself, but if you have Glasnow, Yamamoto and Buehler as your top three, and then you still have Bobby Miller behind that, that's kind of the theory behind it. Right now, you know, I think it's still plenty in order to get through the regular season, even without Walker Buehler. For let him take his time, because the Dodgers right now, they have so many prospects that they can bring up. They can convert Kyle Hurt into a starting arm. Ryan Yarbrough, we kind of forget, yesterday or the last game in opening day, he went three innings of relief and had a save right after Tyler Glasnow. So he can provide like that piggyback kind of role. So, you know, you have Bobby Miller as well, who was electric last year. He had a few rough starts in the middle of the season, which ruined his numbers. But Bobby Miller is a guy that could be like ace status, and he's your third guy. So, like you mentioned, there's an embarrassment of riches, and that's even without some other guys healthy, which is crazy to say. I do expect the Dodgers to kind of take the same situation as last year and be, you know, four or five innings as the starter, you know, maybe six, like we saw with Glasnow on opening day at Dodger Stadium. But then after that, kind of use long relief, use their bullpen. Because look, the bullpen is still elite. I mean, in the second half of last year, they were one of the best in the league. So if they can utilize that as much as possible and keep the innings down on the arms that they have, I think that's the ideal scenario right now. But for now, even without Buehler, without Kershaw, I think they have such a great rotation. You know, Gavin Stone won that last rotation spot, and even he looks filthy. So, like you said, embarrassment of riches, it's a good thing to have. But even without those guys, if you want to just let them rest until maybe July or August, they'll still be okay.
One more thing about the game. Dave Roberts had mentioned that Tyler Glasnow has not even shown his best stuff this season. He conveyed that to Dave. Again, was maybe not comfortable in South Korea. He was, again, in a offseason, obviously, and rightfully so, dominated by Ohtani and Yamamoto. Tyler Glasnow, as we, you know, progress in this season and perhaps even into the postseason and maybe to the World Series. I mean, how big of a signing was Tyler Glasnow? And again, we saw a glimpse of that during the first home game of the season.
Yeah, he's going to be critical. He should take the role of the ace now. You know, I know when Shohei Ohtani comes back, he'll probably take that. You know, we'll see what happens with Yamamoto. But, you know, for Glasnow, he has that ace type stuff, right? We saw it with the Rays for plenty of years. The issue with him was that he just couldn't stay healthy. And when he's healthy, though, he is one of the best pitchers in the league stuff-wise. And I think my main issue with him coming into this year, my issue with him over his career, because I've watched him very closely, was his command. And my thing with it was when the Dodgers acquired him, the Dodgers are very good with their, you know, I know we like to make fun of, but the pitching lab that they have with Mark Pryor. Yeah. He has a tendency to really turn around careers, get guys in gear, you know, use command as kind of a weapon, right? They don't really have to throw 98, 99. They can use command to get around the zone. That's what I expected them to do with Tyler Glasnow, and that's what I still expect them to do this season, to kind of reverse that narrative that he leaves balls over the plate, and that, you know, sometimes he can walk too many guys. I think Tyler Glasnow, if he keeps the walks down, if he can improve his command under this new pitching lab, I guess you could say, he could be probably in the Cy Young conversation if he stays healthy. And, you know, by all accounts, Tyler Glasnow has mentioned that he feels as healthy as he's been in 3 years, which is a great sign, because, you know, he had elbow issues, he had forearm issues, he had cramping issues with the Rays. But, you know, he had his surgeries, he's had his rehab. He looks insanely healthy. He looks like the kind of guy that you'd want as your ace. So, you know, for him, he's going to be the number one guy. He's going to be the number one guy this year. And, you know, I know we're going to wait and see until, you know, next year with Shohei Ohtani. I don't know if he'll become the ace. We're going to have to see how that progresses. But for now, Tyler Glasnow is certainly the ace of the staff. And in the first couple of games, yes, he had a shaky start in Korea. Like you said, he was probably a little bit uncomfortable. But if we're going to get the Tyler Glasnow we saw at Dodger Stadium, I mean, he's going to be in the Cy Young conversation if he's healthy.
Yeah, that would be amazing if that's the case. Switching gears, as we head into the weekend, Grant, the Clippers, again, we talked about this big four-game road trip for them. They begin it with a controversial, but who cares at the end of the day if you get a win. They defeat the Philadelphia 76ers on Wednesday. So they got a big game tonight against the Orlando Magic. This was one that obviously you weren't too confident about. But listen, now that they got the first win under their belt, they've had you know, some time to think about adjustments. Anyways, your thoughts on not just the game tonight, but really this road trip for them?
Yeah, it was such a gritty win against the 76ers. That was the type of win that you need it if you're going to break a losing streak, if you're going to break a slump. That's the way to do it. You know, they did it with defense. They did it with effort. They did it with clutch shooting. You know, tonight against Orlando, it's not going to be any easier. Honestly, it's probably going to be a little bit tougher. I mean, this is a team with a lot of size. They're very young. They have Paolo Banchero, Franz Wagner. You know, they have an excellent young team coached by Jamal Mosley, who should be in the Coach of the Year award running. They've kind of overexceeded expectations, the Magic, but for the Clippers, keep that same mindset. I know you just won one and you're on a high, but it's going to be even harder now because, in my opinion, the Magic are better than the Sixers right now. And you can look at the seeding wise and look at it that way too. So this is a team, look, a Magic team that has a lot of size. And you know what I say to you about when the Clippers face size, right? It's going to be difficult. So I expect some rotation changes, honestly. I expect them to maybe use Daniel Tice, use Mason Plumlee. We haven't seen much of them. Ty Lue has kind of gone to the small ball rotation. He loves to do that late in the season and in the playoffs. But I expect some rotation changes just to kind of combat what the Magic are going to do. But look, the Clippers are still an insanely talented team. I'm not saying that they can't beat Orlando. But, you know, I just need to see another process like we saw in Philadelphia. And if they do bring the same effort, if they do bring the same defense, if they can shoot the lights out, you know, Paul George has been he's kind of gotten back to what he was, you know, pre-February in December and January. And Kawhi Leonard, he's locked in on defense again. If I see that again, of course they have a chance to win. Honestly, Arash, when I see them put forth that kind of effort that we saw against Philadelphia, I think they can beat anybody, and that's Denver too, because that was their main issue. It wasn't the physical part. It was never about, you know, if they're healthy or not. They're healthy now. They have a fully clean roster, and so does Orlando. My issue with them was the lack of focus and the between-the-ears stuff, and they kind of corrected that against Philadelphia. So we're going to have to see if they do it tonight, and if they do, I mean, they can come away with a win and have a great rest of the road trip.
You were at Russell Westbrook's first game back. Again, maybe forget about the numbers, which is almost crazy to say with a player who back-to-back seasons averaged a triple-double, one of the greatest players when it comes to that of all time, first ballot Hall of Famer. So weird to say forget the numbers, but what does Russell bring to the table? A lot of players and a lot of people who follow this team kind of pinpointed maybe this team trending in the wrong direction when he went down. Now that he's back, again, small sample size, but they win in Philadelphia. What does he bring to the table that they did not have without him?
You know, a lot of people have been talking about this, and for good reason, because he just brings some type of spark and energy and just a type of leadership that the the locker room really doesn't have. And that's what a lot of people that I've been hearing around media is saying, is that the Clippers don't have a voice, right? They don't have this guy that's like a Patrick Beverley, like a Draymond Green, you know, like a player like that, to speak up. And Russell Westbrook is that guy, and they did not have him for a while. And I know that he was on the court, you know, on the bench in street clothes, but it's different when you have that type of leader on the court and competing with you. You know, he's the type of guy that just brings energy at, from the minute that he comes in to the minute he comes out. And I would honestly like to see his minutes increase, because he played 18 minutes in his first game against Indiana, and he played 17 against Philadelphia. You know, if he can kind of bring a spark to this team, he's honestly one of the guys that plays like a younger player. So I kind of categorize him as a younger player because he plays like some of the younger talent in the league. And the Clippers need all that, right? They're an older team, and they need that kind of jolt in these regular season games. Obviously, we know how Kawhi Leonard is in the playoffs. We know Paul George is in the playoffs. We know these guys can perform then. But they, in these games where, you know, you're playing a team like Charlotte when you're playing them next, or you're playing a team like Orlando, and it's not really a game that you want to get up for, and Russell Westbrook can provide that spark and that energy, that's huge for this team, and that's what they were lacking. Not just that, but he's a great guard rebounder, and he's a great guard defender. I think this is the best defense Russell Westbrook has played since his OKC days, and we all know how great of a rebounder he is at that guard spot. So you get those two back. They've had problems rebounding. Russell Westbrook can bring a lot of that type of stuff, and you know, it's not a coincidence that they played one of their best games in his second game back. Yeah. So I think he can change just the mentality of the team. You know, when he's in there and competing with you, it's different from him, you know, in street clothes on the bench, you know, just cheering you on. When he's on the floor with you and can kind of dictate your energy, that's what they were missing.
My last thing for you, as we head into the weekend and really a big stretch for the Clippers, we kind of think that they're locked into this 4-5 matchup. Having that home court, how important is that to not begin this series in New Orleans for two and have a game seven there? How big is it for them to keep that four seed again? They are just a half game up right now.
Oh, it's huge, especially with, you know, New Orleans just beat Milwaukee at home, and they looked fantastic. Zion looked fantastic. For the Clippers, it is essential, because you have not had any success in New Orleans. I know they won one in New Orleans earlier in the year. They kind of blew them out. But other than that, it's been all Pelicans in New Orleans. They do not play well there. Honestly, I don't like the matchup at all. A team that I maybe look for, Arash, the Mavericks are kind of creeping up here.
Yeah.
They maybe steal a five seed if the Pelicans don't get it together. But home court is huge for them, because you start the first two games, like you said, you get game seven in the first round, especially against a team that you've struggled with. That's going to be big.
Yeah, I mean, by the way, how amazing would it be to get another Clippers Dallas Mavericks series?
No,
no, just kidding. Just kidding. No, Luka. I mean, that's kind of become its own mini rivalry, I guess. But anyway, amazing job, Grant. That is all the time we have for today. Let's do it again on Monday. Until then, this is Arash Markazi saying stay safe and stay healthy.
This is the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.